Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, movie truthers. Welcome back to one of our festival dispatches from the London Film Festival. Here today, we're recording at Stephen Street, the home offices of the BFI, the nerve centre, if you will. Very glad to welcome back Hannah Strong. Hannah, welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And we're also joined today by Jojo Ajishafe. Welcome, Jojo. You've been doing the Critics Mentorship Programme at the London Film Festival. How's the experience been so far?
Yeah, it's been a really good experience. It's really not like anything I've done before, because this is my only second time coming to the festival full stop. The last time was 2 years ago, and that was just kind of like a few screenings per week after school and stuff. So to be able to fully immerse myself in it, and with kind of the press pass to be able to go to the P&I screenings as well, that's just all been a whirlwind experience. I really enjoyed it.
So fully immersed.
Yeah.
And what have your highlights been? Any recommendations you'd give us?
Top highlight was the first day going to the Mayfair. And see, I know Callie, I listened to Callie's podcast, and Callie also talked about how insane the Mayfair Hotel is. And going to the press conference and seeing like Idris Elba, Regina King, James Samuels, Jonathan Majors, because Black Man in San Francisco is one of my favourite films. So seeing him was insane. And then going to the premiere of that in the evening, unlike anything I've seen, especially with Jay-Z there. Apparently Beyonce was there too, but I didn't see her. And then just being able to go to a bunch of films throughout the last couple of weeks, I've never watched so many films in my life at once, probably apart from like in the depths of lockdown. So that's all been really cool.
That's really cool. Yeah, I heard such good things about that opening ceremony, how electric the atmosphere was, and the Royal Festival Hall, how much buzz can be in that massive room with everybody in attendance and everything. But after the opening night, of course, you know, nearly 2 weeks of screenings after that, what stood out for you?
Last night I saw Petite Maman, which I think has been my favourite of the whole festival. That made me cry. It was actually beautiful. And I knew it was going to be gorgeous because I love all of her stuff. But like that one, just it might be one of my favourite things she's done apart from Portrait of a Lady on Fire. It just stood out and completely not what I expected, but in a good way. It was just everything about it was just so beautiful. I was kind of sat awestruck by everything. And then, slightly unpopular opinion, I guess, but I really enjoyed The French Dispatch. Everybody says like there was no content or anything, and I was like, I know, but I kind of just like sitting and watching it look pretty, it must be said. So I really enjoyed The French Dispatch, but I really love Wes Anderson, so I guess I'm biased.
So did you see that at the gala, or do you see that at the press screening?
I saw it at the press, one of the P&I screenings, but it was really early and I had to get there at like 7:15, so I fell asleep. And I didn't realise how much I'd fallen asleep until the next day. I saw it at a public screening at 2 in the afternoon. And there were genuinely whole scenes that I'd missed that I didn't realise, which I guess does then say something about the content, if I could miss whole scenes and then realise I didn't miss whole scenes. But watching it the second time around, it was a lot better. I was like, well, the full film.
But that's the thing, and that's something, Hannah, we talk about all the time when we talk about film festivals, is you've got to manage your energy levels, got to make sure you sleep well, you've got to have your slow burn energy food between screenings.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a film festival until you've fallen asleep in something. I fell asleep in Memoria at Cannes and missed basically the whole film, and woke up afterwards very refreshed, but with no idea what happened. But I did read afterwards that Appy Chapong actually sees it as a great compliment when you fall asleep in your in his films. So really, I'm just the most dedicated critic out there, I guess. You know, but now I think it is exhausting. And you sound so ridiculous to people who aren't like film people when you say, yeah, I've been watching films all week, I'm so tired. They're just like, really? Okay, weird. But yeah, these 8 a.m. screenings, and this festival in particular, you have had to kind of queue early because of Bond disrupting all the screens. They've had to put all the press screenings in smaller cinemas, which has meant less people can get in. And yeah, it's been a little bit chaotic. But I don't think the LFF team have done badly, considering what they were up against. And it's been, yeah, for me as well, it's been a really fun one. Because we usually see so much at other festivals, I think LFF's a little bit smaller for Little White Lies. But this year, because so many people, friends and kind of like talent-wise, were coming in for this, it's been really nice to kind of just see people in the flesh again. Mm-hmm. And I've similarly, opening night, was sat there like, back at the movies, guys. Isn't this exciting? It's been a good one, as you can probably hear from the fact I'm losing my voice. done a lot of like talking this week, which has been lovely.
Well, that's why I asked about the gala for French Dispatch, because that's one of those galas where he wasn't at the red carpet, but Bill Murray arrived as the film was on and then wandered on stage. And those are the sort of magical festival moments that LFF has had in spades this year. Looking at the footage from the Succession preview screening that they had with all the cast on stage, again, packed out Royal Festival Hall screening. Amazing to see how those things.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Go down. So Jojo, you've had this experience of being able to experience a festival fully immersed. We've talked about films you enjoyed, but what are the sort of experiences that you're going to remember from this?
Definitely, firstly, the whole waking up and queuing thing, because that did take a second to get used to. Because I remember the first day after the Hard Day Fall, the Thursday morning, I wanted to see Spencer, and I thought I'd gotten up decently early or something. No. But to be honest, I guess like that is the magic and the beauty of it. Because one of the best films I saw was Compartment Number 6, and I had never even heard of it or anything. But by the time I got to the front of the queue, they went, "There's no more tickets for Spencer. Do you want to go to Compartment Number 6?" And I was like, "I don't know what that is," but I didn't queue all this time to not see anything. So I went into it, and it was this beautiful film about like two strangers who meet on a train. It's nothing like Before Sunrise. I know that sounds exciting, but it's nothing like it. The love story, it was kind of, it's not your typical like dreamy movie romance type thing. It's kind of just people that get along really well in a way that I wasn't expecting. So kind of, I guess that is the magic of two of the favorite films I saw, that and I really enjoyed Mona Lisa and The Blood Moon, were just things where I couldn't get into the one I wanted to see, so then ended up just seeing that instead, and then going, that wasn't even on my radar, but come out and I've given it like at least 4 stars. So I think that's definitely been something that I've really enjoyed, where like if I wasn't in that situation, then wouldn't have watched either of those films probably. Whereas like I've come out and really enjoyed both of them. That kind of stuff has been something that I really enjoy.
Yeah, that is really cool. Whenever we go to festivals, it is quite easy to be, you know, dragged along by the current of the big films. But sometimes it's those films you see in the sidebars in the other strands. And there is such a diversity of films on in terms of genre, in terms of size, in terms of where they're coming from in the world, and so many surprises to have. So, yeah, I'm glad you had that experience of discovering your own little gem at the festival off in your own track. So was it possible as part of the cohort, I guess, the group of the mentees to kind of all have your own little track? Were you all coming back at the end of the day and sharing what you'd found?
Yeah, that was quite nice because, like, everybody would end up going to, say if there was, like, three different films at the same time. I remember, like, one time there was a day where it was, like, Souvenir Part 2, the first wave in the Velvet Underground, and it was, like, a couple people in Souvenir Part 2, a couple people in the first wave, and I went to the Velvet Underground, and then you kind of all come back and you've all seen these different films, and then when you're meeting for, like, whatever they've got scheduled for you at lunchtime or whatever, come back and can all talk about what film you've watched and, like, how that was, and then go, oh, that sounded good. Oh, that was great. Like, I got to see that when that comes out. Oh, the film I went to wasn't that great. Should have gone to see that instead. And, like, that kind of stuff's really cool. And just being able to know that you guys were all in the same cinema watching three completely different films and then could come back and kind of convene about what you've watched.
Yeah, and how were the actual, like, workshops and everything that was going on alongside all the screenings? What did you learn there?
Oh, those were really interesting because you had a lot of talks and interactions with critics, which I personally had never really had before, and you've got them from like a range of publications, so you're learning about criticism from all angles, not just kind of the same thing. You've got like the Empire, Telegraph, just kind of all telling you about their experiences and kind of what they've done and giving you advice on how to further get to that stage, which is really interesting and really useful.
That's really cool. So Hannah, when you were on one of these dispatches earlier in the festival, we were talking about how you were doing jury duty, not in a courtroom sense, but in a festival sense. How was that experience? And can we reveal now what was, right?
Yeah, I think we're safe. The word should be out there by the time this will be broadcast out to our listeners' ears. I was very nervous because it's my first like big jury. I did a smaller one in Milan, but that was a very much kind of, there were only three of us, and it was very casual. This was my first, like, you've actually got commitments, you've got to go to like these screenings and you've got to go to these lunches, and it was like a whirlwind. It was the most kind of intense 4 days of my life. So it was me, Parno Bailey Bond, Isabel Sandoval, and then two actors, wonderful actors, super nice guys who I wasn't really familiar with before, Nabhan Rizwan and Aki Omashaibi, I think. I'm very, very sorry if they're listening. I don't think they would be. But I'm sorry if I butchered your names there. But yeah, really great group to be doing it with, because I think we all came from very different places. It was particularly interesting having two actors as a critic, because I kind of roughly know how directors think, but like to hear it from a kind of what an actor is interested in when they're watching films was really interesting. And we were lucky to have such a great group of films as well. All these first-time filmmakers from all around the world, really. We had Italy, we had Lebanon, we had Wales. Poor Wales getting just stuck in there. No, it was a really strong group of films, and it was nice to kind of just be immersed in this, in things that I think could get lost at a festival the size of LFF. So it feels to me like I've not seen anything this festival, but I have. I've been sat in a room watching like eight films. But yeah, it was very kind of intense and interesting to kind of have to fight your corner for a film, because I'm not really used to that. I'm used to just being able to say whatever I want and then like it goes out into the void, you know.
As we know from the Venom 2 episode.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, if Rogan had been with me, God, we would have just like somehow managed to give the award to Venom 2. Yeah, so we had this very, about an hour and a half of deliberations with Isabel was our jury president, sadly couldn't make it into town due to COVID. So she was Zooming in from North Carolina, bless her, at like, must have been like 9 a.m. for her. And we'd all just come off this really, like, we had a huge lunch at the Charlotte Street Hotel, so we were all a bit like, just, you know, brain dead by that point. But we had a really great discussion. It was really engaging and really kind of a lot of like critical thought about all the films. We were all kind of coming at it from different angles, but I think we were unanimous in our favourite. So should I start with the commendation, do you think, and then like work up?
Yeah, let's work up, yeah.
So yeah, we decided to give, because the way the Sutherland works is we have one winner and then we are allowed to give a special commendation if we feel there's a film that was a close second. And this was where the drama came, because we all decided our winner quite easily, but then the commendation was where there were two films that kind of split us down the middle. So in the end, it was Piccolo Corpo, or Small Body, by Laura Simonini, which was our commendation. It's really beautiful. I believe Italian and possibly French co-production. I might be wrong on that. But it's definitely set in Italy. And it's about a woman whose baby is stillborn, and she sets off on this journey to give her baby like a proper burial. I'm not going to lie, the first half didn't really grab me, but then it kind of takes a turn and I was just rapt. It's really beautiful. I hadn't really seen anything like it. And it's fascinating how there's this comparison drawn between the woman and her child and this character she meets along the way. And this idea of kind of, what do you do if you have a person who doesn't have an identity, doesn't have a name, and they feel like they're stuck in limbo. I can't really say much more than that because I feel like I'll spoil the surprise. But yeah, really beautiful film. And that was one that premiered at Cannes, and I don't think it really got as much kind of fanfare as it deserved. It was in the Critics Week sidebar. But yeah, we were really, really glad to give that a commendation. And then our winner was Laura Wandel's Playground, which is another Cannes film. And that's a Belgian film about these two school children, a brother and sister. The little sister starts school and kind of all she wants to do is hang out with her brother, but slowly realises he's being quite badly bullied. And it's just this incredibly tense, hyper-focused drama on this relationship between this brother and sister. And it is all set within the playground or the school kind of building. It doesn't ever show them outside of that context. And yeah, we all just kind of came out of it with like a shell shock reaction. There was a lot of like, that brought up some unpleasant memories chat. We were all like traumatized by it. But I think for us, it was the idea of elevating this universal experience to something like truly cinematic and managing to make us care so deeply about this experience, which could be kind of quite insignificant. And we were just all very, very impressed. And we thought it was such a complete vision, and I can definitely see the director kind of going on to do big things, which is another thing we have to take into context with the Sutherland Award, because the providence of that award is crazy. It's, you know, Lynn Ramsey has won it, Cleo Barnard has won it, Robert Eggers has won it, Julia Ducanar has won it. So it's, we were also kind of conscious of choosing someone that we think really will kind of go on to have this a big career. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I feel very kind of honoured that the BFI asked me to do it, having attended the festival 4 or 5 times now. So, yeah, it was really lovely. And the team that were kind of looking after us were so nice and so accommodating. And I was lucky enough to kind of go to a lot of gala screenings as a result of doing the jury. And, yeah, just, yeah, it was just a really lovely kind of cherry on the top to like a great festival. I'm very excited to kind of share these films with, that sounds so pretentious, but I'm very excited to share these films with kind of other people. And it's, yeah, I hope I get to do more juries in the future. If anyone asks you to do a jury, just go for it. It's so fun.
Yeah, so Playground then, one Playground to look out for. That
definitely
sounds great.
Yeah, quite traumatizing for anyone who ever was bullied as a child. But yeah, I think that Wandel and Samani, our two Lauras, are definitely going places. And it was really great, actually, the four films that we were looking at in our deliberations were all directed by women, which we didn't even realise until we came to kind of our absolute final picks. We were like, oh, we've inadvertently picked four women, which was kind of, it was really it was a nice feeling that even without trying to, we'd kind of managed to elevate these voices within the selection. And yeah, I'm very impressed by the caliber generally. I think it was a really strong year. And I give a shout out as well to the other film that kind of just missed out, which was Costa Brava, Lebanon, which we also were fans of. So yeah, great. It was a good year and I'm very happy and exhausted.
That's the best thing about film festivals, that maybe you see however many films, a list as long as your arm, but you always come away as well with the films you maybe missed or you heard via word of mouth to then go and catch up later down the line. So Jojo, was Playground on your radar? Is that something you're going to go and check out now? Any other films that you missed that you want to go and catch in the future?
Playground wasn't actually. Small Bodies was, because Laura, I forgot her last name, but she did a panel that we went to and talked about the film, and it sounded really good from that. So did, I forgot her name, it's so bad, the lady who did Costa Brava. There was a panel just for film, female filmmakers. Both of them were there. So I think Sadie Frost for Quant, and then also for Wolfsuit, not Sadie Frost, but the lady, I can't remember any of their names. They were all there, and that was really interesting. So kind of, I'd only seen Quant, and all three of the other ladies convinced me to watch their films too. But I think also Paris 13th District was one that I really wanted to watch, but I didn't quite catch. That seemed like something I'd really want to
see. It's really good. It's so good. I watched that at Cannes, and I think it is coming out like fairly soon, within the next few months. And it's just such a beautiful film. Really funny as well. And it was co-written by Celine Sciamma, so you'll love it.
And that is what a good thing as well, is when you see a film at festival, you miss a film at festival, but it has distribution. And there are a few films this year that are coming out quite quickly. So I managed to finally, and I mentioned this on all of the other dispatches, get to see Ryusuke Hamaguchi's Drive My Car, the 3-hour-long Japanese drama. We talked about it, didn't we? Adapted from a Haruki Murakami short story, but expanded beyond it.
I recommended it on our first dispatch. I'm really glad you got to see it. It's very much your thing, isn't it?
Very much my vibe. I've been listening to the soundtrack ever since. I'm looking at how to dress like the lead actor, who's very much a sort of autumnal style guru.
I don't know if he told you this. I'm sure he did. But friend of the podcast, Jake Cunningham, watched the film. And I saw him last night and he said he immediately went out and bought a shirt because he thought it looked a bit like something that the character would wear.
And yeah, long-term listeners know that Jake and I host a podcast together, so maybe that could be our uniform for now. we'll be dressed like the...
Hey, it worked for Steve Jobs, didn't it?
But Drive My Car is out in November. It's amazing to say that usually the 3-hour-long Japanese drama is the thing that maybe you see at a film festival and you never see again. Your film, like actually Isabel Sandoval's Lunga Franca, was a festival film that still hasn't been generally released here.
And we always talk about this as well. I think we have mentioned it on the podcast, this idea that when you see stuff at a festival, there is a good chance that you will be one of maybe 100 people who get to see it total, because it will never get a proper home. So I think part of our remit at Little White Lies is to kind of like bang the drum for these like films that maybe will kind of go under the radar, and hopefully there are distributors listening who will be like, maybe we should pick that up. But certainly that's how I feel about Small Body and Playground. I don't know what the distribution situation is for those, but it would be great if they kind of got a wider audience, because I think they're more than deserving. And it's great to come to festivals and see things like the big films, you know, to see Last Night in Soho or to see Spencer or to see Power of the Dog. But at the end of the day, all those films have got huge distributors that there was never any chance of those not coming out in cinemas. So I would definitely encourage anyone who attends a film festival in any capacity to try and like just make a little bit of space for something that maybe you haven't heard anything about or that is a 3-hour long film, because I think it's more than worth your while. Even if you don't kind of like jam with something in the end, it's still kind of, I see it as like your due diligence as an attendee to kind of seek something out.
So I'd say Drive My Car is my film of the festival, having not seen many films at this year's London Film Festival. But if we were to home in on one recommendation for listeners to go out and check out or keep on their radar, Jojo, what would you recommend? Sorry to make you home in on one, but if there is one.
Because I've already mentioned Petite Maman loads, so I'm not going to say that. I'll say The Velvet Underground, actually. I really enjoyed that. I'd say go and watch that. That was insane.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that a good thing there is that it's already on Apple TV Plus.
Really?
So that was one where it had the festival premiere, and then it's screening in some cinemas, but it's also going on Apple. So we had a whole episode. I got to interview Todd Haynes, an amazing guy, and that episode's already out. But, yeah, great recommendation. I think Anna and I would agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's kind of... I think I said this on the podcast last week, but I have such fatigue with music docs, and this was a total kind of what's possible with the form type thing. I was like, okay, every person wanting to make a music doc should look at this and then try and like come up to Todd's level. Not copy Todd, but like just try and be as creative and I think imaginative as he is with the source material.
Yeah, I would really recommend listening to that interview. We only had 20 minutes, so we didn't get as nerdy as we'd like to. But he really did, you know, that thoughtfulness that you talk about, Hannah, is absolutely there. He really thought about the look, the feel, the frame, the style of the documentary. And it all flowed out from the research he was doing and the love of the time and the period and the music and the art. So, and that is something that maybe some of the more straightforward music documentaries could learn from. But Hannah, so what's great about doing these podcasts with you or David or Adam, I ask for one recommendation and several come out. So we've talked about several films already in this podcast in the dispatches so far, but what's your one film of the festival if you could pick one?
So yeah, apart from my remit as a juror and the films, I would definitely recommend you watch our winners. It would have to be Come On, Come On, Mike Mills' latest film, which was part of the festival in that it was the surprise film, but it only had one screening, so I think a lot of people probably missed it, but it is out next month, so I definitely keep an eye out. It's just I cried so much. Again, another thing Hannah says on the podcast quite a lot, I was in tears for like the whole thing. I just thought it was so, again, thoughtful and just incredibly poignant. It's about this uncle played by Joaquin Phoenix who is kind of recruited by his sister to look after her son while she is attending to some family problems. And they end up going on this sort of whirlwind tour of the United States whilst he's recording interviews with children for his job in radio. Yeah, I was just really struck by, as always, Mike Mills is, you know, this really attentive filmmaker. He always kind of comes at things with such a strong point of view. I think in 20th Century Women, it was the same thing. You're with him from the start. And I think it's, even when he's doing something that I think looks quite different, this looks quite different to 20th Century Women. It's in black and white for a start. But, and I was quite skeptical of that decision because I thought, is he just doing this for like the, you know, the kind of artsy, like, oh, let's just do it in black and white. But no, actually, I was really kind of surprised at how that ties into this idea of like stopping and listening and focusing on like the world around you. And you get such a strong sense of America at this very strange moment in time just from like listening to the soundscapes. And I was just blown away by it. I think that, I mean, Joaquin's amazing in it. He's always amazing. But Gabby Hoffman, who plays his sister, and the little boy who plays the main character, Woody Norman, he's British. I had no idea he was British until the surprise screening where he came on stage and was British. I was like, he does the most insane, amazing American accent. I was just, to be that talented, that young, is, it's the same with Petit Maman. So these kids just blow my mind. But yeah, I was totally blown away by it. I think it, regardless of whether or not you have kids, but I suspect for people with kids, it will probably hit home pretty hard because it is just about parenting and brother-sister relationships. And I was just, yeah, I was in pieces. I think it is going to be a kind of all-timer. Mike Mills, he doesn't miss.
Wow, so there you have it, listeners. So many recommendations from the London Film Festival this year. And we're only scratching the surface in terms of the discussions we've had on these podcast dispatches. Go to lwlies.com or our Twitter account at lwlies for further coverage and reviews, interviews, etc. from the festival. Jojo, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. If we wanted to go away and read more of your work, chart your rise to critic superstardom, how do we find you?
At the moment, you can't.
Ooh, mystery, right?
I'm working on it, because trying to put all of the stuff that I've been producing over the past couple of weeks to something, because I'm very much at the beginning of this journey, so hopefully soon there'll be stuff underneath, but for now, I'm a mystery.
Well, we'll keep an eye out. Thank you for chatting with us. And Hannah, always a pleasure as well. Listeners, thank you for listening. We'll be back in a few days with a normal new release episode of the podcast. For now, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.